was blood on the handrail and some on the floor. This house was my home, but it ain't no more. Came back for a visit, or just to see his face. But the room started spinning, and I lost my place. You try to hold it in, but it all spilled out. Yeah, it started with a whisper, but it ended with a shout. Hey! Lightning, bugs in a jar. We let them all go while he was looking at the stars. The whiskey ghost rode that Milky Way. Yeah, I remember that night like it was yesterday. The snakes were hissing in the hedges, the rats whispered beneath the floor.
Carter family, Robbie Robertson and Alfred Hitchcock had written songs together, they might sound like this. That's how LA-based Ernest Troost introduces himself in concert. After studying jazz guitar and classical music at the Berklee College of Music, Ernest built a career as an award-winning TV and film composer in Hollywood, before picking up a guitar in 2004 and turning himself into a singer-songwriter. And in 2009, he was named a New Folk winner at the famed Kerrville Folk Festival. His latest album, Oh Love, is already creating quite a buzz within the folk community. An album of real Americana, it features widescreen story songs alongside beautiful and heartfelt love songs. Showcasing a variety of styles from Piedmont blues through waltzes and the odd bit of rock and roll, Oh Love is an album that will surely feature in many people's best of the year. We tracked down Ernest Truce for an interview at home in California. So it's great to talk to you today, Ernest.
Well, it's great to be here, Jan.
I'm pretty excited because I love the Oh Love album, and it's great to be able to talk to you. I think you're in California, is that right?
That's right, yes, Los Angeles.
Which is interesting because you've made your career in Hollywood, and before we get to talking about your career as a singer-songwriter and the wonderful Oh Love album, I thought it would be fun to actually talk a little bit about how you got to this point. You did go to school, I think, for music, is that right?
Yeah, so when I went to school at Berklee College of Music on the East Coast and studied jazz. I was a jazz guitarist and ended up majoring in composition. And by the time I left there, I decided I wanted to try my hand at writing music for film and television, so I moved out to Los Angeles, which is where I live now. And I've been out here for about 25 years, writing music for film and television. And along the way, I've also done, I did a couple of albums with Judy Collins, where there were books of poetry that they wanted set, you know, created songs created around the poetry, you know, people like Gertrude Stein and Emily Dickinson. So that was really a fun project. And they were collections of poems for kids. These were two CDs that came out for children. But other than that, I didn't do any song work for 25, almost 30 years. And then I just decided to reacquaint myself with some of the folk stuff that I had been interested in when I was in high school. And it kind of went from there. I played some shows around Los Angeles, and then I made a couple of albums, and I ended up winning the New Folk Award, which was kind of a lot of encouragement. So I just started doing it more seriously, and now it's kind of taken over. I do more of this than writing music for film and television.
That's the fascinating thing, because to get involved with film and television, and you were very, very successful at that, and then to discover this, I'm curious, because when I was preparing for this interview and I was reading about, I think you were saying about you going into McCabe's, which is a well-known music venue, right?
Right. It's really kind of the folk music venue in Los Angeles. It's been there for, I think it was started in 1959. I hadn't been in there or in a long time, or I don't know if I had ever been in there. And I went in on a Saturday, and the whole vibe of the place, it just reminded me of when I was in high school and was into that kind of music, and it was just sort of an inspiration, and they had an open mic. So I started going to that open mic, and now I've played, like the last 5 or 6 years, I've played sold-out shows there on the main stage. So it was kind of evolved over about 8 years from playing open mics to being a headliner there. And that's been really great because I've been actually able to play with, share the stage with some really great people. Last year I played with Happy Trom. I had met him and I asked him if he wanted to do a show, and he came out here to Los Angeles and we did a show together there. And I've also played with Ray Bonneville, who you probably know.
Right, that's right. I think actually we talked over social media about Ray Bonneville a few weeks ago.
So that's been really good. You know, they've been really great to me at McCabe's and had me back every year. In fact, last year I played twice. So that's been really cool, and it was really kind of an inspiration. And there's been a few radio DJs here in Los Angeles area that have really been supportive. They were the first ones to play my music, and I've continued to go on their shows and do performances or interviews. And that's helped me build up an audience here on the West Coast.
The thing I find fascinating is the fact, I mean, you were pretty immersed, though, in the, you know, composing for TV and film. Most of that music, was that orchestral? I mean, did you have much opportunity to play with a guitar at those times?
No, I never did. In fact, I went for a period of 10 years where I never even played the guitar. And I was very much focused on orchestral music. I mean, that was sort of a goal of mine when I came here to be able to someday do a session at Capitol Studios with an orchestra and conduct it. And it took, I think, about five or six years after I got here to one day I was at Capitol conducting an orchestra, you know, and I said, okay, this is pretty cool. And I did that for quite a while. I did a lot of Hallmark Hall of Fames, the movie specials that they put on, and all kinds of other things. And I've written jazz. I did a couple of movies, and those particular films were for television, and they were the people that produced the film, they didn't want sort of an orchestral score. They actually wanted more of a folk score. So that was one of the first times I really got to just use really simple folk melodies and score a movie that way. And actually, I got nominated for an Emmy for one of those scores, and then I did a sequel, and I did that one as well. So that was a lot of fun.
The thing I find most interesting is when I received the CD, and there's that quotation that I think is something that you use in your shows. If the Carter family, Robbie Robertson and Alfred Hitchcock, wrote songs together, they might sound like this. And I always remember when I picked it up and opened it, and I thought, well, this looks interesting. And I put it in, and then immediately we're into the old screen door, which, as a song, has this incredible widescreen feel to it. And then I learned more about your history, you know, the fact that you come from a composing background. When you listen to the other songs, and we'll play one or two during this interview, but one of the things that seems pretty clear is the lyrical side is very important. I still get the feel there is a bit of a soundscape thing going on, even though you're now a singer-songwriter. Does that make any sense?
Well, it does. I mean, I produced this album with Dennis Reed, who was my mastering engineer, so he kind of did it. We did this over the phone, but I recorded everything, I arranged everything, and I played a lot of the instruments. And it is an orchestral in terms of having lots of instruments. In fact, many times I recorded instruments and ended up dropping them because I wanted more of a spare kind of thing. But I think what you might be referring to is like an old screen door is almost like a rock tune. It has distorted guitars and drums. And to me, the story, you know, telling the story, whatever the lyrics happen to be, it's very much like a film in that, you know, with Old Screen Door, which is a very powerful story, the electric guitars just seemed right. It you know, it could be a folk song, and I think it is a folk song. It just happens to be a loud folk song. But that goes, that comes from my history of scoring movies, I think, that I sort of tap into the emotional, you know, weight of the subject matter and try to determine how the arrangement works with the lyrics. So I would say that for me, the lyrics are almost more important than anything, which is something before about probably 10 years ago, I never did lyrics.
Well, you know, the fascinating thing about a song like Old Screen Door is the fact that you could arrange it a whole bunch of different ways, and it would sound completely different, which I find most fascinating. Is that because it is just a really good song, and that the best songs have the ability, you know, to do that you can stretch them in different ways, and produce that? Is that a reasonable thing to say?
Well, hopefully. I mean, I'd like to think it is. It's a good song. I mean, what I do with all my songs is that I create them strictly with a guitar and voice, and I play them until I can't think of anything else to do to make them better. I make sure that they are really working with just my vocal and guitar before I start thinking about arrangements and things like that. And I very often will take them out and perform them and come back and make some more changes. It takes me a long time to kind of decide that the song is really done. So hopefully when I do feel like it's done, well, then I can kind of put on another hat, a producer hat, and say, well, what do I want to, you know, what's the best setting for this story? Should it just be sort of mandolin and guitar? you know, like something like Harlan County Boys, which is a very different story. Or should it be more, you know, electric guitars? I mean, I guess at this point, you know, Stratocaster, Fender Stratocaster guitars are as folk an instrument as anything is, really. I mean, it might not be acoustic, but it's definitely a folk instrument in that everybody plays them.
Well, I think certainly the genres generally have become so stretched because of the nature of the way people produce music these days. I mean, I always find it fascinating when I'm actually, you know, I'm putting my music into the computer that I'm going to play on the next show, and then, you know, it always says, well, what genre do you want to put this down? And you know, you can put half an album that's folk, and then, you know, some of them are definitely more into blues, and some of them are straight rock. The other thing, I just want to touch on Old Screen Door once more before we go to Harlan County Boys, because the other thing I found fascinating about that song is it's very much a song that when I listen to it, I imagine a video. Wide open spaces, and then coming up, you know, across an old gas station, then maybe, you know, the home where all of this is happening. As a composer, I imagine that you spend a lot of time trying to get into the feel of whatever you're being asked to compose for, right?
Well, sure. In terms of working on a film, television,
yeah,
or film, yeah, you watch the film many times before you write anything, you know, just to get into the mood. And in fact, with Old Screen Door, some incident like that happened in a town when I was a kid in my hometown. I never knew the details of it. It was just sort of something that happened, and we just knew it happened in this particular house. So we were always, when we were young kids, we were afraid to walk by this house. I remembered the story of that something happening in this house, and then what would sometimes happen is I'd, you know, go to bed at night and I'd imagine this scene. And it was just like watching the opening of a movie, and it was a young kid, you know, like a teenager or somebody, sitting on a back porch in the summer at night, and there's fireflies flickering. It looks like kind of a very tranquil scene. And then he stands up, the camera is above him, you know, you're looking down at him. He stands up and walks into the house, and you see that he's leaving footprints that are bloody footprints. So that scene just kept running over and over in my house, in my mind, and I just thought to myself, what is the story here? And then I created the song.
You know, it's interesting because I see this almost going round again when somebody picks up the song for, you know, a TV show or a movie. I don't know if that's happened yet, but I certainly can see that this definitely will.
Oh, it could, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, so that's... It's an interesting story. I gotta say, when I talk to you and, you know, knowing your history, knowing the album, there's something about it. It's like, wow, you know, this is just a great way to teach people how to songwrite, you know, to get more into...
Oh, well, that's
to, nice of you to say that. To going beyond that. Oh, yeah, no, this is absolutely fascinating. We're going to take a break for some music, and I'd love to be able to play Harlan County Boys, but what I would like you to do is maybe just tell us a little bit about that song before we do that.
Yeah, that song, you know, I did a little research. I had a friend that was living in Nashville, and she was a lawyer that helped families and towns that were being polluted by mining. And for some reason, I just did a little research on Harlan County and all the mines there and all the mine workers. And I thought, well, I'll write a story, you know, I'll write a song about, you know, this hard life of the miner. And that's what I started out to do. And then the song just took over, which songs sometimes do, and it ended up being about a grandmother. You know, and it's seen through a grandmother's eyes, the various generation of miners, but it's really about her. So I think I'll leave it at that as an introduction.
Well, it's a very sweet song, and, you know, in some ways, I mean, I love the lyrical nature of it. And I think that Nicole Gordon, who sings on a few of these songs, is beautiful harmony that she brings to it.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
We're going to take a break. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio. I'm Jan Hall. I'm talking to Ernest Troost today, and we're going to play a track from the album Oh Love. And this is Harlan County Boys.
High on this ridge, where the pines reach up and touch the slate gray sky. My granddaddy lived till this cold black mountain swallowed him alive. And his willful young bride, she buried her grief like coal deep inside. She said, I've had a heap of sorrow and just a scrap of joy. And I'll miss with every breath my Harlan County boy. We lost my daddy too. In the great Union struggles of 72, when blood and anger roiled this land, and Grandma held back a crowd with one raised hand. She said, I've had a heap of sorrow, just a scrap of joy. And I fear I've lost another of my Harlan County boys. And though I am my father's son, I did not work the mines. I left this mountain, I had other ones to climb. But I can hear my grandma's voice through the city noise. Remember that you'll always be a Harlan County boy. Standing in this shade beneath this spreading pine near Grandma's grave, they're all gathered round in their Sunday best neath this hallowed ground. Though she had a heap of sorrow and just a scrap of joy, now she'll be forever with her Harlan County boys. Though she had a heap of sorrow and just a scrap of joy, she'll be forever with her Harlan County boys.
That was Ernest Troost from the album Oh Love. The track we listened to was Harlan County Boys, and it's my great pleasure today to talk to Ernest about the album. We've talked a bit about the widescreen production. We've talked about your, obviously, your training and your career as a composer for film and television. The wide range of styles that are on this album, you dip into to blues, and I think in particular the Piedmont blues, right? And some of these songs?
Yes. Well, Piedmont Blues is sort of how I got back into writing folk music or blues music. I actually, as we talked about, McCabe's, which is a big folk center here. I actually read about various old blues musicians from, you know, from the Piedmont region, which is the eastern region of the southern United States, and people like Mississippi John Hurt and Blind Blake, and I got some books on how to play their music and their CDs, and I taught myself that style, and then I started writing songs in that style, not, you know, obviously with my own lyrics, but using those techniques of the alternating bass and independent kind of playing. It's a fun style to play. I think the song "Pray Real Hard," which is probably one of the things that comes to mind, is a pretty pure Piedmont blues style tune. I just love the style. And it's very different than sort of a singer-songwriter or an old-time country kind of tune, because you're almost playing the guitar like a piano.
That song comes straight after Old Screen Door, right, on the album. So it's
that's the second track. Yeah.
And I love the way it switches. And I think that's, I don't know if that's just one of the things that really makes this album so appealing, is the fact that you switch and you're into something different. Is that part of your thinking? And again, does that go back to the fact that, you know, you have this great wealth of experience as a composer as well?
Well, I think that what I do when I write, I mean, I'm in the process of doing a lot of writing. When I finish a song, the next song I start, I just say to myself, well, I don't want it to be, you know, that type of song. I don't want it to be like, if I just did a slow one, I'll say, well, I want this to be faster. Maybe the last one was more of a folk, slow folk thing. Maybe I like this one to be more blues. And I'll just lean in that direction. And I end up with a big collection of songs that hopefully has a real diversity. And I have to point out that as far as the sequencing of the album, like where these songs go, the sound man at McCabe's is a good friend of mine, Wayne Griffiths, and he's an amazing guy. He's been listening to the best folk musicians for, you know, the last 30 years. And a couple of years ago, he said to me, you know, when you do your next album, you know, if you want somebody to sequence it, let me do it, because I'm really good at that. And so I had kind of put in an order that I thought would work, and then I remembered he had said it, so I just gave it to him, and he did it. And he sent over two suggested orders, and he said his favorite was the first one, which is the one that we used. It's the one which starts with Old Screen Door. And he said, I think you should just start with that song. And I just said, you know, this really sounds great. Let's just do it. So that was really someone else's creative input that I just really am thankful for. Because it really made, I think that it makes the most of the diversity of the album.
Well, you know, you're right on there. Because the thing is, and again, you know, when you get a lot of CDs sent to you and, you know, you're looking through them and think, okay, which one am I going to play next? It's always tricky because, you know, there are times you put them in and it's like, okay, a few seconds of this. And you know, before you know where you are, you're sitting there and say, okay, let's put another CD in. Well, and I think that it's a testament to a great CD the first time, because there are CDs that grow on you, but there are CDs that immediately grab your attention. And again, this was one of those. I think I played it in the car the first time. And, you know, it's great car music, there's absolutely no doubt. But one of the things that strikes you, and I think testament to the sequencing, but I found that you put it on and you go all the way through. And to me, that is one of the things that really says this is a really great, great CD.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to go back into the album a little later, but I wanted to touch on, you mentioned, I think, the Kerrville Wine and Music Festival, because you won that in 2009. That must have been quite a shock for you to find out that there was this other part of your life that, you know, perhaps hadn't been developed. Did you have an inkling that as a songwriter that, you know, you had something there that was going to have some longevity to it?
Well, you know, I think I had done one album, and I think it was my second album, Resurrection Blues, that I was mixing with this producer, mixer, and I think I had sent some things in the past to the Kerrville Festival, and never heard anything back. And he was the one that brought up, he said, you know, these songs, you know, these couple of songs here, you might want to send them. And I said, well, I never win those things. I'm not going to do it. Anyway, he persisted, and I'm glad he did. And going to Kerrville was just an amazing thing. It really was, because you step into this world that obviously has always existed since the 60s or whenever they started there. I think Kerrville goes back to, well, actually 71 or something. But there's all these people and all these songwriters, and it was just a world I was not plugged into for 25 years. And I have to say that when I ended up winning, you know, I was one of the six, every year there's six New Folk winners. When I ended up winning that, it really felt better to me than when I won an Emmy. You know, when I won an Emmy and you're in this big fancy ballroom and all these fancy people all around, it was great. There's no doubt about it. But being in Kerrville with these kind of down-to-earth people that are all about song just felt very satisfying to me. And I said, gee, this is great. I want to do more of this.
And what about the live experience as well? Because I imagine that must have been a lot different from what you were used to before, you know, where you would spend so much time composing. Was there a lot of time for live performance as a composer compared to where you are now, when, you know, it may be just you, or it may be you with a small band playing together?
Yeah, well, as a composer, really, I'm all alone in a room writing music for weeks on end. And then at the end, you go into a studio and you conduct the orchestra, and that one day is very exciting and really fun. But I guess the real difference is that, and both worlds are equally satisfying, they're just in different ways. When you write music for film and television, you're trying to enhance somebody else's story. That's your job. You know, the director and the producer and the writer of those stories are hiring you to help them tell the story the way they would like it to be told. And that's what you do. But when you write a song and you go out and perform it, especially if you go out alone with your guitar and perform it, it's your story. So you've made all the decisions on how you're going to, you know, convey this story, the style and the melody and how you're going to do it. And it's a real thrill. I just have to say, it's a real thrill.
Do you see yourself going back to film composing, or, you know, working on you know, the film, TV composing sort of thing? Or is this the new Ernest Troost, and this is the way you'll move forward from now on?
I think it's probably going to be a mix, because I've always done a variety of film and television work. You know, like I said, I've done some Hallmark, I've done horror movies, I've done things that really don't maybe suit me as much, but it's part of the job, so you do them. I think I'll probably do less things that don't suit me. But I, for instance, I do a lot of scores for a company on the East Coast that does children's film. They take award-winning children's picture books, and they do these 10-minute animated films, very much like what you might see sort of the Canadian Film Board animation kind of stuff. And that, I've worked for them for over 30 years scoring their movies. And it's a very creative thing for me, and it's very much in, you know, the sensibility is very much like my songs. So I'll probably always do that. It's just that I'll be writing for, you know, maybe that week I'll write for clarinet and string quartet. But it seems like it's all of one piece, you know, making stuff up. It just depends on what I'm going to work on that particular day, you know.
And I imagine it's also, that goes back to the discussion we had earlier about the two albums you did for Judy Collins, because, you know, you were working with obviously the poetry, but I mean, basically you composed, arranged, and then provided the two albums to Judy. And I was actually just checking out some of the reviews of the albums before we came to air today. And you still get, you know, people writing reviews that are very recent. And I think the albums were done, in the mid-90s, and talking about how important those albums had been for their kids. And I suppose it's part of the same thing, right?
Yeah, you know, if you can, I think it's, I think I have a certain sensibility, and I can see parallels, whether it's a film that I'm doing, or a song, or a setting poetry for someone, or even our documentaries. I've done documentaries. I did a documentary for A&E on Beatrix Potter. I just loved it. I wrote all this pastoral British music because that, to me, is not very far from folk music. And actually, all the music that I've written for Hallmark Hall of Fame, even though it's big orchestral music, because Hallmark Hall of Fame is sort of an American brand, I always approached it sort of like Aaron Copland, that it was, you know, simple Americana-sounding music. And that's not really so far from what I do when I write a song.
No, absolutely. I think actually, to be honest, I mean, I sometimes struggle with Americana as a genre name, but I think when I pick up your album, I'll say, oh, yeah, this is definitely Americana.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. You talked about the future of continuing these two strands of a career. As far as Ernest True singer-songwriter, are you already working on songs that will, you know, be on a future album?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've got a whole mess. I've spent, you know, I've been spending a bunch of time recently because I have a bunch of shows on the East Coast coming up in October and November. And I, you know, usually when I'm traveling, I just don't write as much. So I'm trying to get a lot of writing done now. So that's been going very well. But I hope to do more performing. I mean, I haven't really done, besides Kerrville, I haven't done many festivals, and I'd like to do that, though. And it seems like festivals tend to like more groups, which makes sense to me because there's big stages outside. But I feel more comfortable more in an intimate kind of setting, you know, like 150, 200 seat kind of venues. As I do more of this, I just find out about more and people tell me about more. And so I hope that I can just do a lot more playing and performing.
So if you were playing and, I mean, you know, taking the festival thing a little further, would you be playing a festival as a singer-songwriter, you know, which obviously is perfect for the workshop style scenario, mm-hmm. Or would you be able to bring a band that maybe have, you know, someone doing harmony vocals, etc. in there?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I could do that. In fact, I recently went to Connecticut on the East Coast. There's a very, very good series, singer-songwriter series in Richfield, Connecticut that I had been hearing about, and I really wanted to play it, and I met the woman at NRFA 2 years ago, that the woman who runs it, and she liked me, so I eventually played this past year, actually in the summer, and Nicole Gordon, who has moved to the East Coast, into Pennsylvania, called me up and said, look, I see you're playing this show. It's only 3 hours away from me. I'll drive up. So she drove up, and we did the show together, which was lots of fun. So it's definitely fun and possible to do that. I mean, I have lots of musicians that I work with and lots of people that I could always do. It's just a matter of, I suppose for festivals, it's an economic one. If a festival, you know, if it made sense to bring two or three people along financially, then it would be a great thing to do.
Yeah, you know, I feel like saying, well, all you need to do is just knock out a couple more film scores and then you'll get to go do this afterwards. Because I know we haven't talked about coming to Canada. I get encouraged when people say, well, you know, if you're on the West Coast, we're coming to the East Coast, because it isn't so far to go after that to get you up into Ontario. And I would love to. I think it would be fabulous to be able to see you at some of the summer festivals we have here. Especially so because, you know, we would have the opportunity to see you on a, you know, for your stage concert. But also, I think it would be great fun having you in a workshop as well with some other people.
I'd love to do that. Yeah. In fact, that's one of my goals. It really is. I actually met, I think I mentioned John Wertheim to you.
Yeah.
I met him, I guess it was at Kerrville. It was at Kerrville, because he also won at Kerrville, not the same year, but he wanted. I think he's based in Alberta, maybe, and he has said to me a couple times. I've met him at festival at conferences, and he just said we should tour together, and I know Ray Bonneville plays a lot of festivals up in.
Yeah, indeed, he's been up a few times. No, I. Yeah, once we get this interview over, I will definitely talk to you briefly before we get done, because I think it would be fabulous to get you up here. You know what? Yeah. What can I say? It is a great album. I know that the folk community loves it. This is definitely one of my favorite albums of the year so far. And
thank you very much.
I really wanted to thank you for spending the time to talk to me today. We have just a few moments left, and I'd like you to introduce the song we will close with. Another song from the album. What would you like us to play?
Let's play Last Lullaby.
That sounds perfect. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, it's sort of an elegy to my uncle who passed away years ago. He was a very he was a great storyteller and a great guy and kind of an inspiration. And this thing just happened. This song just happened, and I felt like it was a perfect way to end the album with something, kind of quiet and serene. So I think it's probably a good way to end this broadcast.
That's lovely. This is Ernest Troost from the album O Love and the beautiful The Last Lullaby. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
She brings you home with this last. la la la.